Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome back. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Not only that, there's something else you should know. It's we are solidly one day into hurricane summer. It's we're going to talk a little bit about that today. There's a peculiar fallacy that we have that kind of ruins the way we see our world around us. And that is that, you know what they're saying on the TV now or whatever it is people look at. What they're saying is it's back to school, it's fall sales, everything, fall is about to happen, fall. Everybody's got this crazy idea about seasons. And it doesn't work for us. It doesn't work for us anywhere in Alabama. And I hope you've heard me say this before. We don't need to borrow our ideas about seasons from Austria or Germany. We need to have our own seasons. They need to reflect what it's like here. And as a great example, seasons in the Arctic aren't the same as seasons on the equator, right? They're very different. So, how do we capture our own seasons here along the Gulf Coast? And so one of the things I've been thinking about is we probably have six seasons. And we've talked about that a lot here. Six seasons, very important. And understanding those six seasons. But let me tell you, forget about all that. Look at what happens. And then try to fit the seasons to it. One of the big things that's happening now, and the thing that we kind of built our one of our structures around, is that the weather changes dramatically this time of year. It stops raining every day. Oh, it's raining a lot now, I know. But it'll stop here pretty soon. It'll get more sporadic. And the rainfalls that we have will be related to tropical fronts moving in the first part of the season. In the latter part of the season, we'll get a little bit of continental, but it'll be mostly these tropical fronts moving in. That's the rain that we get locally. Hurricane summer. It's dictated by hurricanes. But, that's spooky. It's not just a negative season. It's the season of possibilities. It is the great seasonal transition. It's why we spent so much time last week talking about the vegetables you could plant in your yard. And that's really important. It's the time for planting vegetables. A great time for planting flowers as well. Yeah, I know. They don't do that in Michigan, do they? Your buddies up in Michigan, they don't plant flowers this time of year, do they? No, they don't. They can't. Doesn't make any sense. But it makes sense for us because we are not in Michigan. We don't have those cold seasons. We have a full summer ahead of us. We have a summer that's almost as long as Michigan summer ahead of us with hurricane summer before fall starts. It's all this is really important. But then I'm thinking, what else is going on? And it maybe I shouldn't call it hurricane summer. Maybe that's, we should be honest, shouldn't we? We should be honest and say hurricanes are a part of life on the Gulf Coast and in Alabama, but we don't like to be honest with ourselves. We like to stick our head in the sand. We should be prepared for those things. But maybe you would be able to digest these seasons a little better if I reminded you that this is goldenrod summer. This is butterfly summer. The summer that left us, the summer that we just left behind was hibiscus summer. Oh man, were the hibiscus beautiful. All kinds of hibiscus all over the state. Even in the drought, they were blooming. Hibiscus summer, that middle of summer flower, that great middle of summer flower. Hibiscus summer, dragonfly summer. The dragonflies were everywhere, everywhere, and they'll still linger, but boy was July. You know, I think of Mobile as the city of dragonflies. I hope we don't end up driving them all away, but it's just this beautiful city of dragonflies in July, isn't it? Incredible. All the insects. Now, it's the butterflies. And they're coming down. It's very interesting. I think they sense this is something is happening big, really big in this season. So they're coming down from up north. All of these butterflies from up north. The populations of our local butterflies are building. They're all converging here because of this great, incredible wildflower display that's about to happen. It was better at one time, no question. It was much better. We didn't all treat our whole state like it was some putting green, mowing everything into oblivion. But the wildflowers are still there. There are still places that people don't weed whack their fence rows religiously. Thank goodness. We still have places on the highways that the mowers can't quite get to and that the herbicide can't get to, and the wildflowers are coming back, and the butterflies are with them, and the goldenrods are going to be front and center. You know, it's an interesting thing. We don't have just one goldenrod in Alabama. We used to be the goldenrod state that was the state flower, the goldenrod. And it made a lot of sense because we have, I've got to go back and count them all up, but we've got probably 4 or 5 dozen goldenrod species in Alabama. Huge number of goldenrod species. And they're all blooming in different places at different times in different ways, but it's all concentrated in this time of year, the goldenrods. It won't be just the goldenrods. The asters are going to start. There are all kinds of asters. The liatris, the what do we call them? The old name was gayfeather. The modern name, what do we call them? Blazing stars. The blazing stars are starting back. They're going to be incredible purple. The ironweed is going to be back. It's going to be huge. It's going to be beautiful all along those roads, those purple tops. Jopi weed. The many kinds of jopi weeds with its big purple domes. They're all out. They're all beginning to do their thing this time of year. The eupatoriums, the thoroughworts, they're all there. They're blooming. They're everywhere. The mare's tails. And it's just heaven for butterflies. And they'll be all over it. They got the pollen. They got the nectar, I'm sorry. And they're going to be working those flowers and just enjoying life. This is their great time of convergence. It's the great season. Last from now, about August 20th through October 15th. That seems to be a good time to look at it, and that's our season, hurricane season. The season of dragonflies, the season of butterflies, the season of wildflowers, the season of goldenrod. That's it. Let's let CCR take us out and give us a little more thought about this change in season.
Yeah. Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. It's hurricane summer, but it's a good summer. Lots of stuff going on. Hope to hear from you this morning. You know, we talked last week about all the things you can be doing, all the great things you can be doing in your yard right now. It's really a great time for planting and getting things started. So let's talk a little bit more about that, and what to do, and how it all works. It's really a great time to be starting in the garden. You know, if it's interesting, I guess if I had to say, when does the gardening year start in Alabama? I would say the best time to think about starting the garden year is right now, not in spring. And actually, spring is trickier. There's a lot more things to think about. This is a great time. It's an easy time to start the garden. Remember that a lot of plants you need to start in containers this time of year. That's okay, too. You can just start them on your windowsill just like you would in spring. If you were starting tomatoes, you just start them on the windowsill. Put them out on the porch. You can ask me about how all that works in detail. And there's so many great things to be planting. That's fun. Put them out in the garden because this is the... let the butterflies tell you. Let the wildflowers that are coming up tell you, this is a great time for growing. This is a great time for flowering. This is a great time for fruits and seeds. This is when it's going to be happening. And you should play along. You should listen. You should pay attention to what's happening. So there it is. There it is. It's a great season of planting here along the Gulf Coast with Hurricane Summer. We have, let me remind you, on the Gulf Coast, up until, late November, early December before the first frost occurs. Even in North Alabama, even in the northernmost ranges of Alabama, the coldest parts of Alabama, you're still not going to get a frost until really the 1st of November, sometimes later, November 7th. So there's a lot of growing that can be done. Compare that to areas that where we think we are. Compare that to Michigan, where we get most of our gardening advice, or New England, where frost falls really middle of September or even earlier. It's a lot of growing season left here, a lot of growing season left. Charlie says we got a caller. I'm listening. Who's calling? Nancy, I'm listening. What's up?
What's up is I have some of this first night purple grass, and when I look it up, they say don't transplant right now. However, it's all clumped up, and I wanted to transplant it, and I wondered if I could do that now in our temperature and in our climate.
It's called a first night purple grass.
Yeah, it's kind of like a muley grass. You put it around like riprap and on rocky promontories.
Yeah, it's a pentacetum. It's a cultivar. That's interesting. I would guess that. This is probably as good a time to plant it as any. I wouldn't think it would do really well. Have you grown it much before? Have you grown it really along the seashore? around the rocks on the edge of the water?
I know that on the, along the edge of the water, our neighbors have like the pink muley grass. And this is so pretty, and it's thriving above our septic tank.
Do less well. It's a Mediterranean grass, which is pretty different than our climate. I don't know about that. I mean, I would say, yeah, probably now is as good a time to divide it as any. You'll have to water it. I don't know that it's going to do as well near the shoreline. It probably, oh, there's so many great native grasses that you could be doing, but you can try it. I'm not sure how well it's going to do there. Do you get a lot of how far up the water are you? Are you getting brackish water?
Yeah, we have brackish water, and we've got a 16-foot riprap bank, and this will be at the top of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say this is probably as good a time as any. It's not. It's probably not going to like being in a wet place, and probably won't like the may not like salt spray as much or brackish water, but you could certainly try it now. And I don't think this one's invasive. Does yours ever flower?
I haven't seen that happen. I've only recently planted it, and it's looking really nice. I've just planted it just as a temporary spot.
Yeah. So this was selected for its cold hardiness, which is interesting, very interesting at University of Georgia by their program, because they've been catering to the national market. I don't know how it's going to do long term in the heat, but it'll certainly be interesting. Huh? Yeah, give it a shot and see what happens. And I would think fall is probably the best time to divide it, given the fact that, given what it is, most grasses actually, they do a little better being divided earlier in the year, but you're probably fine.
Well, I will give it a shot, and then if it doesn't work out, I'll hunt some native grasses.
Yeah. And call me back if you're looking for some other. There are some great ones. They're not as widely sold because they don't grow up north as well. This one was designed, as like most of our things, we get hand-me-down plants. And this was a plant designed for Michigan, literally.
Michigan.
And we get it down here because nobody designs plants for us, because we gladly buy plants designed for Michigan. So it's too bad, but let's see how it does. Tell me how it does, and that'll be a good test. And then we'll try some native grasses as well.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sharon. I'm listening. What's up?
Good morning. I'm calling for someone who wants to plant a dogwood tree. For shade beside the driveway. There's another dogwood tree farther down the driveway, but she wants one in a different spot. She had a bay tree, but it was considered too messy, so she had it taken down. And I know dogwood trees haven't been doing well in past years, but has that changed now? And if so, when should she plant one, and what variety should she plant?
Yeah, I would say for about the past 40 years, dogwoods have been having a real problem along the Gulf Coast, and probably always had a little bit of a problem. They're not really great trees, and you can get some to survive, but they can start looking funky pretty quickly if you have a... And they don't like full sun, and they don't particularly like being moved either. So if this dogwood is, I mean, she can certainly try it, but I wouldn't hold out a lot of hope if the dogwood is more than, say, 3 or 4 feet tall. It would need to be very small before you moved it. How big is this dogwood?
Oh, she doesn't want to move one. She wants to plant an additional one.
Ah.
Or another tree that is not messy, that gets about the same size.
Okay. Well, let's... Yeah, so there's some great possibilities. I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. And Charlie's telling me I got to take a break here, but I've got some great trees for you as soon as we come back from this break. Can you hold on? We'll be right back.
Yes, sir.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Sharon, let's get back to your question of trees. I mean, dogwoods are really tricky, really difficult to deal with. Is this in a... You have a friend who wants to plant... another dogwood, which is like planting two death wishes right next to each other, and you know that they're both going to really struggle, and particularly the dogwoods that we buy from nurseries now, they're even less well adapted to the South. They tend to come from Ohio and other places, and so that's one of the reasons that led to the dogwood decline, was moving these nursery trees around with that had high susceptibility to disease. So I don't recommend a dogwood, but you know, there's a lot of other possibilities. So when you said there was a bay tree, tell me, what kind of, do you know what kind of bay tree? Was it like a sweet bay magnolia? Was it a magnolia, little flowered magnolia?
I don't know. But it was messy. I know it was messy.
Okay. There it is. So that's messy, meaning it dropped leaves, it dropped flowers. Was it an evergreen? We don't know. So I'm just trying to figure out what she might like. Let me give you a suggestion for some trees. I think a Japanese magnolia can be a very pretty tree for an area like that. That can work okay. There's lots of kinds. You don't want to put it in a really dry place, so I'm not sure how dry this area is and how much sun it gets. Do you have a sense of that? Is it a dry place? Is it get a lot of sun? Does it get a lot of reflected heat from the driveway?
I don't think it would get a lot of heat from the driveway.
Okay.
But I think it is a tall, I think it is it's not a soggy place.
Yeah.
A high place.
Well, and that's a good thing. Well, so let's go through a list of trees real quickly. Have you got something to write down? So
yes,
she can
sir.
Look at them, and yeah. So the first one I would say is fringe tree. Fringe tree. FRINGE, otherwise known as Grancy Graybeard. Some people call it Grancy Graybeard, but that's an old name, and you probably don't hear it as much. But it's an old Southern tree. Grancy Graybeard, fringe tree, does really well, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful in spring. People always resent me for saying it, but I like it better than dogwood. It's prettier to me. It's just covered in flowers. The flowers are much more consistent than any dogwood that she could try. So fringe tree would work very well. Any of the Japanese or Asian magnolias would work well there. If she doesn't want it to get too tall, she'll want to get a smaller one, one of the smaller Japanese magnolias, but they'll work very well there, and I think she'd be happy with that. I don't think of either one of those trees as particularly messy. And I'm always curious as to what people mean by messy. Because, you know, these are living creatures. They do drop leaves. Dogwoods seem to me to be kind of messy, but it's because they drop limbs all the time. But, you know, I think she'll be very happy with one of those two. Those could be very good. You know, there's on the Gulf Coast, we have lots of other possibilities as well. I like loquats, and loquats, if she wants an evergreen tree, a loquat can be very pretty. L-O-Q-U-A-T, loquat. Very nice tree. It does have fruits, and if fruits, and the fruits are quite delicious, and if having delicious fruits means that it's messy, then I'd have to say that loquat is messy. Because the fruits, you'd want to eat the fruit when it produces a fruit. So she may or may not like that. But I think the Japanese magnolias and the Grancy Graybeard are both very nice. They have very small, when they shed things, they're very small. The leaves on they're fine. They're both really beautiful and really fine. Does that help?
Yes, it does. I know she had a loquat once. Got rid of, but it was right up against the house. That may have been why. But yeah. I will pass this along. Thank you very much, Bill.
All right, Sharon. Thank you. It's always, you know, it's hard shopping for other people, isn't it? You never know exactly what's gonna appeal to them. And sometimes they don't know what's gonna appeal to them, which is always interesting. It's an interesting world out there. Let's see. We've got lots of other messages. Johnny in Grand Bay is asking me about planting the spider lily bulbs. So I'm looking at them. They were in a pot for years. So this, Johnny, I will say that this is probably not the best time to plant them out. But it's not the worst time. If they can, it's probably not the worst time either. If they're root bound in that pot, if they're root bound in the pot and they don't have any more room to grow and they're just struggling there in the pot, maybe it's better to go ahead and move them and put them in the garden. Generally, I would say this is not the best time because there'll be a delay because they're already putting out roots for the new year. They may be flowering for you already, and that's one of the things that happens during hurricane summer is those red spider lilies come up, and they're just beautiful. The white peachy spider lilies also come up, and a lot of people may be seeing that. The red ones will be coming up soon. So, Johnny, you got a choice. You can leave them in the pot for another year. Probably they'll flower a little bit this year in that container. And then when they go dormant, you can plant them next spring, which is generally the best time to do it, after those leaves come out and go dormant. Or you can take them and divide them now. It's going to set them back. It will set them back, more than likely, if you plant them out now. Because they're already putting out roots. They're not just bulbs. They probably already have roots. One thing you can do is feel around, see if they've put out the roots already. If they haven't put out roots yet, if they haven't put out the new roots, if you don't see those white roots, pull them out of the pot, you can tell. If you don't see a lot of white roots, go ahead and plant them now. Divide them and plant them now. And do divide them. Don't leave them in that clump in that pot because they need to be spread around. If you don't see the white roots, plant them out now. You don't see a lot of white roots. If you just see a few, you can go ahead and divide them. Plant them out. If you do see a lot of white roots, you could plant them now, or you could leave them until next spring and wait for that foliage to die down and then plant them out. It all depends on whether they're struggling or happy in that container. They can probably grow in that container for another year and be okay. So you'll have to decide. But generally spring, April, May is the best time for dividing them because their roots have already gone dormant, and they'll stay dormant during the summer. until just before they begin to flower in fall, which is just about now. So check the roots. See how many white roots there are. If you don't see any white roots, you go ahead and divide them. This is the best time. Let me know what you find. Alicia has given me some great pictures of okra. And, you know, it's every year I experiment with okra. And this year, there's all kind of okra varieties out there now. It's really, really kind of fun. We are in a... In some ways, plant availability is not very good anymore. we don't have sources of local plants. It's getting very, very hard to find them, even plants that do well here. So when I say, boy, grasses would do great, because we're the Mobile County is the center of grass diversity in eastern North America, which it is. And then what we end up with is some grass that somebody developed to be cold hardy in Michigan. It's kind of a shame, isn't it? We're kind of left out of that. But on the other hand, we really do have really great opportunities with seeds, because we're finally getting in vegetables from places that have climates more like ours. So we're not having to get our vegetables from Germany anymore. Germany's a very nice place. I always have to reiterate this. Michigan, Germany, they're all great places, but they're not like, they have nothing in common in terms of climate with the Gulf Coast. And that's a big problem. So, you know, people are going to get German Johnson tomatoes or some tomato that was developed in Germany, which is super tasty over there. That's an interesting problem, isn't it? Their climate's not like ours. So now we're beginning to get things like, as Alicia is showing, these beautiful okras from lots of places. Alicia's growing an old favorite from the South called Clemson Spineless, which is good. It was developed because it doesn't have any little prickly things on its fruit or on its leaves. But so since Alicia asked, are there any others that I really like? Well, yeah. And in fact, There's a bunch of them. One of them that I really like that's really done well for me over the years is Sea Island Red, which is a beautiful red okra that I think you'll really like. It's very productive. Alabama Red okra, which is not fully red, but just is a big, chunky, beautiful okra, has got to be, from a flavor standpoint, maybe my favorite. If you like roasted okra, if you like fried okra, either way, we should talk about how you cook. That's a great one. Big Buck okra is another great one. That Buck's, I think it's called Buck's Snapping okra, is another great one. There's one that I tried this year called Nkrumah 10-10. And it's very interesting. It's from Ghana, and it's done beautifully in the garden and is producing lots and lots of fruits. And we're going to be back to talk a little bit more about okra in just a minute.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and we want more.
Live
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch. Daylight come.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Through the window, by the window, that's where all be come to town, through the tulips with me.
Well, we're going to put some new music in, but Tiny's going to still be with us, won't he? So a couple of questions. Johnny, to reiterate, Johnny, you're at a bright time to go ahead and put those out. Put them out. If they're dry, they're not getting any better. They're not getting any better. Just go ahead. You're right. Put them out now. They'll be fine. I would generally put them out, you know, as soon as I dig them in April, May. But they're great now. Put them outside. They'll be fine. They may bloom. There's a possibility they'll bloom. They'll be a little off cycle. Go ahead and put them out now. Now is the time. Don't worry about them. Put those spider lily bulbs out now, now that I got that information from you. That's good. Glad we could fix that. So Alicia wanted me to talk about okra for a minute, and boy, do I ever want to talk about okra. You know, there's some great places to get started with okra. Take advantage of your resources. Southern Exposure Seed Exchange has always been pretty good about having some good okra varieties, and they're still pretty good about it. They don't change their varieties very often, and that's okay. They kind of just stick with what works. And, for example, at Southern Exposure Seed Exchange, you can get Alabama Red Okra, which I really like for flavor. I think it's really about as good as anything. There is another one that's very similar. It's Beck's Big Buck. And both of those have done real well for me. They've been very good okra. They're fat okra. They're big, fat okra. And I love them. But they're unbelievably delicious. They're a lot of fun. And we'll talk about how to cook those. We'll talk about how to cook them. What else have they got? They've got, I'm looking, Gold Coast okra, which is a really fine okra. It's spineless. It's probably, I think I like it a little better than Clemson spineless. It's similar, but probably a little better. Evertender is a great one. Hill Country Heirloom Red Okra is probably the equal of Alabama Red. It's a great one. On the Gulf Coast, I think the Hill Country Heirloom Red Okra probably did as well or better than Alabama Red. It's a great one. And it's another fat okra, really fat okra. They've got some here that I haven't tried, like Puerto Rican Everblush Okra, which gonna have to try that one. Puerto Rican Everblush Okra. You just kind of look through this list. Shows okra I've grown did real well. And some of the okras that they used to have, they don't have anymore. That's too bad. But they've got some great ones here. Another place that is doing really well for okra, since you asked, Alicia, is rareseeds.com, which is Baker Creek, and they have some really nice okra plants. I'm just looking at some of the ones that I got from them this past year. This Nekruma 1010, which I really like. It's a very tender okra. I was surprised at how tender it is, and it's probably good for a lot of uses, like even raw. It's fun. Things like Jing Orange is another one that they've got that's really pretty. Heavy hitter okra I grew. It is a heavy hitter. It produces a lot. Bowling Red Okra is really a wonderful okra. Bowling Red. Oh, man, it just makes me remember. It's from the Bowling family. It was a great red okra. I probably like it as well or better than the Sea Island red okra. It's really good. So there's a ton of okra out there. Okinawan pink okra. I grew it. Pink okra. It was sort of pink. I'm not growing it again. I'll just say I didn't think it was that exceptional. But it's out there. So there's a lot of fun with okra, and we shouldn't. No need to just sit on the other ones. Here's one that I haven't tried. We're beginning to get okra from the motherland of okra, which is Africa. And here's one, motherland okra, a mammoth heirloom okra from West Africa that produces gargantuan edible leaves and delicious pods. So that brings up another thing, that okra leaves are actually edible. They're actually eaten in many places. But these, and a lot of the African varieties, the leaves are as good as the okra pods themselves. Wow. That's not too surprising. A lot of hibiscus, and okra is a hibiscus relative, have all parts of the plant are useful and edible, and quite interesting. The hibiscus family. Okras, a lot of fun to think about. Those are several places where I've gotten okra seeds. So just to consider while you're out there. Let me see what else we've got questions on this morning. Leaf damage on Dunkin' grapefruit. This we get this a lot, and boy, it's a pretty serious looking thing. It's leaf miners for sure. Sometimes the damage can get pretty severe. In this case, it did. I'm not sure why that grapefruit had so much leaf miner damage. Maybe this is a worse year for leaf miners. I think leaf miners are going to be a little bit less of a problem in the future. We won't have as many because of some predators that have been introduced that tend to reduce their numbers. I expect they're going to get to the Gulf Coast. I could be wrong, but they should get to the Gulf Coast soon enough. But that's leaf miners. Yeah, it didn't do that plant any favors, but it's just on the new growth. You know, one of the things you want to do, leaf miners aren't a problem in early spring. So you want to encourage that early spring growth, particularly in March, April, and May, as you can. That second growth in summer is when it's going to be susceptible to leaf miners. That's when the leaf miners are going to be at their peak. They probably also is the time when leaf miners make the least difference to how well the plant performs. It's that early leaf out that's probably the most important to the citrus. And that second summer leaf out is somewhat less important. And the leaves are still doing just fine. They're still doing just fine. What is the predator? I can't remember. it was released in Florida. I'll try to look that up. You can't buy it. I'm pretty sure. But it is. I do think it is moving this way. There it is. So we're going to be back. We got a lot to talk about. Oh, and I got, what is the name of this flower from Michael Neal? It is Liatris. It is Blazing Star. It is Gay Feather. We're going to talk a lot about it when we come back.
Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. It's also, okay, it's goldenrod summer. We've called it Hurricane Summer because so many of the flowers that come up this time of year are named after the thing that dominates our weather this time of year, or at least in often our thoughts, hurricanes, tropical fronts coming in. Tropical front summer doesn't have quite the ring, does it? Hurricane summer. But let's call it goldenrod summer. Let's call it butterfly summer. Those things are going to be happening. So what's cool, what's neat, is that Michael sent me a picture of a beautiful purple flower. It's one of those wildflowers that's rising to meet the butterflies. It's been, that relationship between the butterflies coming into Alabama from all over, the population's building, and the wildflowers that rise to greet them. It's been going on for a long time. They've sort of depend on each other. You got to think about that, you know? Like, if they didn't have the pollinators coming in, they wouldn't be so successful. And if they didn't rise to meet the pollinators would have a tough time too. So it's been going on for a long time. This season of wildflowers, this season of butterflies, things to look for. And this is one of the species of blazing stars. You know, I'll have to look closely to see which one it is. On the Gulf Coast, I think, given that it's tall and spiky, I'm going to call it Lobelia spicata. Very tall, very beautiful, beautiful purple. They're all different types. If you can look at the flowers and kind of get a sense of which species it is, but we have many species of blazing star. Some of them are super cool. I should give an award to the best picture of blazing star. So if anybody goes out, sees gay feather, blazing star, liatris, liatris, whatever, however you want to say it, all these different names for the same group of plants, they're big wands of purple. They look like a big wand of purple. And they're all over the state. There's so many cool species. There's some relatives of liatris that are closely related. And one of them, as was pointed out to me recently, somebody's waiting on them to show up, is the one we call deer plant, deer tongue. Vanilla plant has a great fragrance to the leaves. Used to take the leaves, if you kind of grew up in the South and you knew your way around the longleaf forest, you'd take the leaves of those, of that vanilla plant, that deer tongue, and you'd put them in your pocket and just wait just a little while, and you pull it out and it's just like the odor of vanilla. It's so much like the odor of vanilla, the coumarin kind of smell, that it was actually used as an additive in tobacco because of that vanilla flavor. People used to go around and collect it. It's out there. It's native. It's cool. It's one of the really cool plants of fall. Purple flowers, kind of unlike blazing star, which has a spike with a bunch of flowers on it, like a big wand. This one has a flat top of purple, and there are a lot of flat top purple plants out there right now. Ironweed, lots of really cool things. They're all rising to meet the butterflies. It's that great season, something we ought to talk about more. You know, the other thing I'd love to talk about, we've been talking about grasses a lot and how important they are, not just long grasses, but other types of grasses, and how people could be using them and causing them and creating much less grief for themselves than having to use grass that has to be mown twice a week during all this rain. Good Lord. Oh, it's terrible. I have to do all that. It's just, can you imagine if you didn't have to spend all that time doing that? What if you just had some grasses that were pretty mannerly, that stayed about knee-high? We've talked about that. What if you used grasses for beautiful screens? What if grasses had beautiful flowers, and many of them do, like sugarcane plume grass, one of the most incredibly beautiful grasses around. And boy, for a coastal situation along the banks of a river, even if you've riprapped the river, sugarcane plume grass would be so pretty. What a great grass. So all of those things are, and they're going to start blooming now. All the grasses are going to start blooming. So you can start sending me pictures of these grasses, and we can go through them and kind of figure out what they are. So some of the best grasses right now are beginning to bloom. Oh, really cool things. Love to see some of those pictures of grasses in bloom. Grasses in bloom. Yes. Find a pretty one. Take a picture of it. That can be really nice. Pat sent me a picture of an oak. It is a water oak, Pat. It's definitely a water oak. It's got some of those funky leaves farther down, but you can see on the ground that they are water oak leaves. Water oaks spend, as we like to say, 20 years growing and 20 years dying along the Gulf Coast. And yours is definitely on the dying side of that. It's also near a building. I can't tell whether or a fence, at least. I can't tell whether that's it's important, but you should know, I can tell you that oak has had a lot of damage, and it's on its last legs. It is on its last legs. I don't know, and I am not sure what caused that ring just up from the trunk. I probably should, but I don't. I'll be thinking about that. I'll be looking it up. But I can tell you, looking at the tree, it's got lots of rot. And it's got some damage around the trunk, too, that's pretty serious. I would say all of that indicates to me you got a problem tree on your hand. If that oak can fall on anything and do damage, it will. I mean, I could just tell you, it will within the next 10 years, and maybe within the next 5 years, and maybe within the next year. It's at that stage. Have somebody look at that oak. It's in pretty bad shape. The brown ring around the trunk is interesting. It is fascinating. It may be an indication of some kind of disease. It could have been an indication of something that wrapped around the trunk. I don't know yet, but I can tell you the rest of the tree is definitely showing signs of that oak going out. Have somebody look at it. Be careful with it. Water oaks are not good trees to have around your house, particularly in a place that has hurricane summer. Just some thought. Some questions about Pat. Feel free to call me if you want to talk about it a little more. Is it time to sow parsley seed yet? Yes. And the reason parsley is actually pretty heat tolerant when it's young. It won't go to flower in fall, which is really nice. It does in spring, but it doesn't in fall. I guess because the days are getting shorter or something. I don't know. Maybe it needs that winter chilling before it goes to flower. That's probably it. It's a biennial. That's it. But it won't go to flower. It won't go to flower in fall. So there's no need to worry about the heat. No need to worry about any of that. Just plant it now. And you can have parsley all winter long. It takes a long time for parsley seed to germinate. That's one of the downsides of parsley. So you gotta be patient with it. So yeah, sow those parsley seeds now. Do it now. A lot of things that we need to be planting now. I hope you're out there. I don't want to go over the whole list, but certainly your broccoli, certainly cabbage. I would begin to sow that now on the Gulf Coast. If you're farther north, you're already behind the behind track just a little bit. Just a little bit. Pat says, depending on the way the wind blows during a storm, it'll fall on either my house or my neighbors. And, of course, during a storm, the wind blows from every direction. That's it. That's the lesson. During a hurricane, the wind blows from every direction. And it may not take a hurricane for a tree like that. So have it checked out. Have it checked out. We're going to be back here in just a minute. Tithonia, Crystal. Tithonia is what that beautiful flower is that you've got. Mexican sunflower. Tithonia.
Walk along the river, sweet lullaby. It just keep on flowing.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning, Alabama Sunday morning. The rise of the wildflowers, the season of the rise of the wildflowers. Waiting for the butterflies. Attracting the butterflies that are going to be in. It's the great butterfly season along the Gulf Coast. They're all going to be coming in. You know, and it's interesting. If I get to talk about butterflies, I'm going to talk about them just a little bit longer. One of the things that we don't recognize, because we get our information from other places rather than using our own eyes to see what's happening here along the Gulf Coast, You know, of course, because you read all the magazine articles and you pay attention to the TV, that monarchs migrate to Mexico. And this is true. They do. And it's really an interesting phenomenon. They move northward, and then they come back down into Mexico. But 40 or 50 years ago, 60 years ago, the assumption was, and not even that long ago, really 40 years ago, the assumption was that most of the butterflies, monarchs, overwintered along the Gulf Coast and then moved north. We didn't even know about these Mexican forests, and that was really interesting, the Oyamel forest in Mexico. We didn't know a lot about them. And what people saw was that the monarchs in November, December, January, February, almost every year along the Gulf Coast, there were huge numbers of them, particularly close to the coast in the wildflowers that continue to bloom into winter along the Gulf Coast, and just huge numbers of them overwintering there and then moving. It still happens. There would be serious years, there would be bad years, when the cold would wipe out most of those populations. That happened. And then I think the Mexican populations were probably pretty important to restoring the populations of migrating monarchs. But those, we're still play an important role in the monarch overwintering here along the Gulf Coast. And nobody really pays any attention to that anymore. Because we all, you know, nothing good can come from the Gulf Coast. Nothing good can come from Alabama. But that's it. They're here. They will be here. You don't believe me? Go out in January. Go out in February. Go out to Point of Pines and where the old Sea Lab was. If those of you who know how Sea Lab got its start, down at the tip of Point of Pines, look at the butterflies there. Look at the monarchs. It's amazing. Cold winters, yeah, there'll be some problems, but most winters, they're still there. And still says something really important about the South as a refuge for these butterfly populations. I think the longleaf forest, when it was at its peak, remember, we've lost all but about 5% of the longleaf forest, and that 5% is not in great shape. Think about a 95% reduction, essentially a 95% reduction in wildflowers in the greatest, largest ecosystem in the South. And you begin to understand what happened to the butterflies. I mean, that was huge. And to the monarchs as well. Restoring longleaf will be, if it's possible anymore, if we don't eat up the last of the longleaf lands, which we're trying to do right now, in Baldwin County and along the Florida coast, in Mobile County as well. Any place we can find to destroy, we will. But what a cool thing. What a cool thing. These monarchs and they're coming here along the Gulf Coast. Something really cool to think about. Really cool to think about. We had a caller with a blight on Lantana. Lantana particularly this time of year, has a lot of pest problems. And lace bugs, Lantana lace bugs, is probably what we're looking at. It's probably what we're looking at. They can make Lantanas look pretty ugly. And it's not really a blight, it's an insect disease. It's an insect, not a disease. So how are you going to deal with it? Because they are mites, you can use, here's what I would do. It's pretty good. You can do a pretty good number on lace bugs, mealy bugs, and a lot of other things that affect them, even spider mites, simply by using, you don't have to use really tough stuff. You can just use horticultural oil. You'll have to spray it on the undersides of the leaves, and it will really do a number. Horticultural oil, just plain old horticultural oil. There's a lot of different varieties out there. I don't know what they're calling it now, but it's a summer horticultural oil. Ultrafine used to be what they sold. I can't remember what they're calling it now. But there's several brand names out there that you can find easily. Just put it in a sprayer. You don't need anything else. It works really well against all of those pests, and it's really great. You don't want to use things with imidacloprid or other kinds of really toxic things in there, because the reason we have lantana is to attract butterflies and bees and other kinds of insects, and that systemic pesticide will kill those and make them sick. It's really a bad thing. But here's the great thing: you don't need to. Horticultural oil is great at controlling those pests. It's not a blight. You can call me, we can talk about it, but it's not a blight. It's almost certainly an insect pest. There you go. So good news on that regard. Really easy to deal with. Just begin to think about it that way. Let me see. We got some other text messages from folks, and we'll get back to those here in just a minute. Who have I got? The Tithonia, we got that one. Wayne, we're going to get back to Wayne here in a minute. I need an oil, and Crystal says, I need an oil safe for butterflies and bees. And, you know, that's the reason we've got this horticultural oil, and it works really well. It depends on what you've got, though. You have to identify the pest. And that's really important. Is neem safe for butterflies and bees? Neem can, not entirely. The good thing about neem is, well, it's not as effective against insects as some products. It also doesn't last as long. One of the things, if you're going to spray neem, you want to spray it at a time when the bees aren't out foraging. I would say you don't want to spray it in the mornings. You probably want to spray it at dusk. But even then, you'll probably capture some of the bees. But the good thing about neem is that it doesn't persist. And it's not like a systemic, which is really bad. But yeah, neem will affect butterflies and bees. But tell me why you need to use it. Tell me why you need to use it, and let's try to see if there isn't another solution to that. I don't really see, it's pretty rare that I need to use a product like neem. There are some things, on cabbages and other things where you're not going to get butterflies and bees, right? Because cabbages aren't flowering, and you might need to use neem on those, and it's probably not going to hurt a whole lot. It might, it can create problems for you because it also kills off predators. It's really terrible as a fungicide. It's really, really poor as a fungicide. So I wouldn't use it as a fungicide, Crystal. It's not great. Let's talk about why you need it as a fungicide. And what are you using it on? So just some questions there. We've decided that everything in life is about that we can deal with it by spraying it, and it doesn't work that way. Thank you.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Rain, rain on my face. Hasn't stopped raining for days. My world is a flood.
Yeah, so I feel like the music is accompanying Crystal's question. It is raining a lot, and please, and certainly plants are going to get lots of spots on the leaves. There'll be some bloom issues. I can reasonably assure you that fungicide applications right now aren't going to help a whole lot. You know, it's sometimes nature happens. I don't think there's any fungicide you could use that's really going to control that effectively. One, you'd have to apply it constantly with all the rain. And so one of the good things is it's about to dry out. You're going to get some dry periods here. They'll come out of that. It's very hard. It's very hard to use a fungicide to control fungal attacks that are already occurring. Once you see them, it's too late. You can kind of use it as a preventative, but it's really hard once you see them. So that means you have to say, like people who grow apples, they say, oh, I know I'm going to get a fungal attack of so-and-so at a certain time of year, so I'm going to spray as a preventative to keep that from happening. And like cedar apple rust. And that's fine. It's also a bit of a problem even then, but and it kind of works. And if you don't mind the fact that the fungicide you're using is probably harmful to humans and certainly to wildlife, but it only works as a preventative. It doesn't work to once you start seeing the diseases. And that means that on the Gulf Coast, yeah, we're going to get spots. And most of the plants are going to grow out of it. And we're going to get some dry spells, and there will be fewer fungal attacks as summer goes on. But I can guarantee you neem will have zero impact in terms as a fungal preventative. Fungus preventative, particularly under these conditions. It's just not going to happen. There are some things you can use that are reasonably safe, copper sulfur compounds, but they really only work as preventatives too. So I gotta say it's like we don't really have a good recipe for those fungal diseases once they're already started. So we kind of have to. What do I say? we like it or not, we have to learn to live with them. And sometimes we can choose plants that don't get the kind of fungal outbreaks that others do. And most plants that have been here on the Gulf Coast for a long time, they're used to it. I mean, they kind of throw off the spots after a while and put on new leaves, and they're all fine. Happens a lot. Happens with roses all the time. People who grow roses just accept the fact that black spot is going to defoliate the rose. So what they get is a rose that is resistant to it's partially resistant to black spot, but it also is able to recover from black spot damage really well. Because it releases really well. So that's one way to think about it. Ted sent me a question about a cactus. And I got to be honest, I think when I was young, I kind of wanted to be a cactus expert. You know, I went through that stage. It was the cactus stage. But I left that me behind a long time ago because it's really tough to grow a wide variety of cactus in a state that gets more rainfall than virtually any other state in the U.S., probably more rainfall than any other state, in a city that gets more rainfall than any other major city in the U.S., Mobile, more than Seattle. It's just a real tough thing to grow a lot of different varieties of cactus. you've done very well. Your sister looks like she's done very well with this cactus in a container. She can certainly put it in the ground. It had better be really well drained. That's all I can say. I don't know which cactus this is. I think it's an Opuntia. I'm not an expert on tropical cactus. It's almost certainly a tropical cactus. That is, it's from a tropical area, but not a wet tropical area, a dry tropical area. It may mean, is she bringing that pot in and out of the house all the time? I can't tell you about that. So if she's been leaving it outside, it's probably a pretty tough cactus. It's got a red flower. It's one of the red-flowered Opuntias, I think, from South America or the Caribbean. But it is going to need well-drained soil, really well-drained. I would not just put it out in the middle of the yard. I might put it in that gravel bed where you don't have to deal with the weeds. There's another thing to think about, and I'll let you in on this thought. You're definitely going to have to weed around that cactus. In a container, weeding is pretty easy. Wait till you put it out in the middle of the yard and you start getting weeds around that cactus, and you have to start weeding it. Have you thought about that? My vote is don't put it out in the yard. Will it survive? Yes. Will you regret it? I can almost assure you that you will regret it if you want to keep that thing alive. Yeah. Foot fungus, yes. So it certainly can. There are things that we certainly can use on humans that stop fungi. And they're all fine because they basically alter the conditions, in part, in which that fungus might survive. But it's different out in nature. It's different out in nature where it's hard to alter the environmental conditions that allow that fungus to thrive, because it's about humidity, it's about rainfall, it's about temperature. And we don't control any of those things very well at all. We can make things warmer, but we have a hard time making things in the yard cooler, right? We can certainly make dry places wetter. We got hoses, we got all that. But it's a lot harder to make wet places drier. And that's why we have a harder time controlling fungus. Dave has got a question about what is the plural of cactuses? I would reckon it's cacti. I don't go to cacti conventions. I'm not fluent in what's current. I think probably cacti is the official. If anybody out there who goes to a convention of cactus lovers can tell us what the proper plural of a cactus is, it would help, because I am no cactus expert, I'll have to tell you. I do like Opuntias. I do like our native Opuntias. And they're really neat. Prickly pears is what we call them. And we got several of them along the Gulf Coast. They're really neat. They're lovely when they stick to the bottom of your shoe. Have you ever gone walking? If you haven't, you haven't been in the right places if you don't have an Opuntia pear pad stuck to the bottom of your shoe. It's really quite an experience. And sometimes it'll just go right through. Opuntia pears, kind of neat. We do have some native cactus that grow in very dry areas with very thin soils where there's no competition, very little competition from other plants. And that's one of the things that cactus kind of count on. Most cactus count on not having a lot of competition from other plants. So when you put them out in the middle of the yard, ooh, boy, do they have a tough time. because they're going to suddenly get a lot of competition from a lot of plants, and you're going to have grasses growing up all around them, and then you're going to have to stick your hand in there. Oh, man, does that hurt. It hurts me to contemplate. It hurts me to think about it. So there it is. Now, Ted, let me go back to Ted. Ted had a much better question, and this is an important question for all of you. Radish seeds, is this the time? You betcha. It's really neat. Even while it's hot, radish seeds come up just fine. There you go. I got you, Ted. When to plant fall radish. You do it right now. One of the neat things about radishes is plant them every 2 to 3 weeks. 4 weeks is too long. About every 2 to 3 weeks, plant another round of radishes. They are so good. And you can start them right now, even in the hottest parts. They're really tough customers. Now, these are winter radishes. You could do the summer radishes, the little spring radishes that are small, too. But this is the time for the big radishes. This is the time for the big fall radishes. If you want to know where to get them, you send me a message. We'll talk about that. But, yes, it's a great time to plant them right now. And keep planting them. About every 2 to 3 weeks, keep pulling them. Once you learn to use radishes, you're going to say, gosh, I miss radish greens. The greens are delicious. They're wonderful for all sorts of things. Plus the roots. You know, we ought to talk a little bit more about how to use radishes. But I said we were going to talk about how to use okra. And a lot of you have got okra coming in. And we're going to talk about cooking okra. I think that is an excellent subject for our last 15 minutes. So you can stay tuned. That's what we're going to dedicate a significant portion of our last 15 minutes to. But you can also ask me questions. So feel free. You got about 10 minutes left. Give us a call. Send me a text. 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. We are heading into hurricane summer. This is the first day. It's an important time for planting.
The rain is falling through the mist of sorrow that surrounded me. The sun could never fall away. The bliss that plays around me. Let it rain.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. We got a lot of rain music, don't we? it's interesting. We could get tired of rain after a while. Yeah. So we might try to reduce a little bit of that rain music. It's great. Clay in Birmingham sent me some great pictures of sauce he's fixing to cook down of just cherry tomatoes, and cherry tomatoes make great sauces, wonderful sauces. There's a lot of skin left in them, and some people don't like the skins. I won't go into why. Skins are fine. They actually give a lot of flavor. But you can actually strain those out pretty easily if you're using them to make a sauce, or you don't have to. It's just fine. You can eat them, and they're really good for you. They add a lot of flavor. A lot of people take the skins off first. They blister the skin off and then don't do that. You lose a lot of flavor that way. It tastes like something they put in a grocery store. If you really want that deep tomato flavor. And Clay, you know that's a good old butterfly weed coming up in your it's a type of Asclepias, a type of milkweed, butterfly weed. Probably not the best for monarchs, but okay. Yeah, we're going to talk with David about melatons coming up. We got that to do, and we got a question here about limelight hydrangeas. I'm listening. Tell me what's up.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
I planted these limelight hydrangeas about a year ago, and the rain has killed them, I feel like. They're dead. And I don't understand why, although I understand that limelights don't like a lot of water. So what can I plant a white hydrangea in their places?
So first off, you need to send me a picture of where you planted these and describe that area a little better. Let me look at it. Before you embark on something else, it's not the rain itself, but it's the soggy soil that causes that would kill them. So,
okay, well, what I did was I planted them in a bed, and the bed is kind of, I've got some roses that I've put hills in, but they're on the downside of a slope. So I feel like the rain has pooled around the roots, and that's what's happened.
Yeah. So it's really wet there. So one of the things, it's not going to matter. Well, we can certainly talk about shrubs that can work in wet conditions, and they're not going to be hydrangeas, any of them. You can build the soil up. Before I get glib about it and just say, yeah, you're going to be able to do all this, is there any way you can send me a picture? Get a picture ready this week and send it to me next Sunday, and let's look at this area, and then I can give you a better sense of how to deal with it.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And that way I tell you something that's really going to work. So take a picture of that area from several different perspectives. Put it on your phone. Just text it to the same number you call in, and do it next Sunday so I don't miss it. If you do it during the week, I might miss it.
Okay.
Do it next Sunday, and we'll talk about it. And call in earlier because we're gonna need to think about it. Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks. So. I want to talk. I want to talk about okra and how to cook it. And Jim in Georgetown, Mrs. Jim in Georgetown, has beat me to the punch with a gumbo relish recipe, which looks really interesting. And I'm gonna have to try this. It's kind of like an alternative to salsa, and I know just where it's coming from. Listen, first off, okra. Can we take a second to talk about okra? Okra is delicious raw. Some varieties are better tasting raw, but none of them taste bad raw. And some of them are particularly delicious. So if you want to make a relish with gumbo, you don't cook it. You slice it up. You put it in the relish. It is absolutely delicious. You could do it. I haven't seen this recipe, and it's too, I can't read it. I can't read down that small. I'm working on it. But it's got peppers in it, which it definitely should have. It looks like it's got tomatoes in it, which is great. What a great thing. Add the tomatoes and the okra together. Really great. Little bit of white vinegar, some sugar, vegetable. All of this is fine. Onions, garlic. Makes a great relish. What a great thing. Raw okra is delicious. You can use it, put it in salads. So let's first off say you don't have to cook okra. You don't have to cook okra. It is great almost any way it's prepared, any variety of okra. Maybe the spineless okra will be better for you, but that's fine. They're all great. If they do have spines, you just kind of rinse them off. They'll be fine. If on the other hand, you want to cook them, there's a lot of great ways to do it. Now, I'll tell you, my favorite way is roasting, and there's a lot of ways to roast. I think my favorite way is to put them in a black skillet. Just slice them. If they're thick, you might want to slice them horizontally across their thickness. If they're long and thin, you might want to slice them lengthwise. There's a lot of different ways to slice them. You slice them however you like, put them in a black skillet. Don't put the oil in there first. You can do that with black skillets. It's one of the cool things. Don't put the oil in there first. Just let that skillet heat up with the okra in it first. Let it get pretty hot. You might even let the skillet get a little hot. Now, don't let it get too hot, but get it a little hot before you throw the okra in there. In fact, put the skillet on, let it get hot, slice your okra up, throw it in there, put in some peppers, put in some garlic, put in some black peppers, and then about halfway through the cooking, add your oil. There's a lot of different kinds of oils. Don't use an oil that has a low heat temperature. Don't use olive oil. You're going to have to use something like, I use camellia oil, which is a great oil. It really, really is great for cooking with. But you could also use peanut oil. Be great. Peanut oil's great. Just put that oil in there and then stir fry it. It's going to be nice and toasty. Oh, it is going to be so good. It's a beautiful way of doing okra. It doesn't come across as slimy either. It's just delicious. Now, the only time that okra gets really slimy is when you cook it too much. So I like boiled okra, but here's how I do it. I cook my rice. I put my rice in a pot, cook the rice, and let the rice cook for about, let's say you're going to cook it about 20 minutes. And just throw the okra in about 5 minutes in and let it just steam on top of that rice. What a cool thing. Lots of discussion about okra. That's it. We're going to be back next week. Have those pictures ready. For next week, we'll talk about all of the problems, even with that limelight hydrangea. We'll be back.